We often get questions on our gardening shows about how to grow plants with minimal chemicals. And, you know, when you think about it, when we talk about our health or our pet's health, it's really not all that different. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. While there are some conditions that demand a heavy-duty antibiotic or other medical treatment, often there are natural remedies that can bring great results. Dr. Carrie Donahue is the owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care. She is a graduate of the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, and she also was named the Best of Madison Veterinarian for 2014. Carrie, so good to have you back with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's always so much to talk about, and we always welcome the calls and questions from our listeners. So let me give that number right away. That's 1-800-642-1234. Again, 800-642-1234. You can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer, will be happy to get those to us. Well, first, Carrie, let's just start out by kind of defining what we're talking about. You do practice both conventional veterinary medicine and holistic care, which brings in a lot of alternatives. Kind of, is there a line between the two, or where is the line between the two?
Boy, you know, I really don't always draw a line between the two. And I guess I kind of define my practice as integrative. Mm-hmm. So using Western medicine and using alternative medicine or holistic medicine often hand in hand, and not really presenting all options to pet owners so that they can make the decision that's right for them and that's right for their mm-hmm. pet.
So it's not, sometimes maybe it's an either or, but it sounds like often it's an either and maybe both.
Yes, exactly. So certain conditions that dogs or cats will come in with, say a type of infection, and I know that we need to treat with antibiotics. But what I will do in addition to antibiotics is also offer like an immune system support supplement, whether that's an herbal or another type of immune system support, along with some other alternatives that they can give with the antibiotics, mm-hmm. such as probiotics, to help bring the body back into balance after using a medication like that.
Right, because sometimes while the medications are necessary and fulfill mm-hmm. a real need, there are also results that are not necessarily positive because of using that medication.
Right, definitely. And a lot of the Western medications that are so targeted for certain diseases and certain organ systems can bring everything out of balance a little bit. So using some natural remedies to bring everything to the body back to a state of being balanced mm-hmm. and being healthy.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that the people that come to your practice with their pets are probably there because they do have an interest in having those extra options. But how do you present those when there is, say, a mainstream, very accepted or expected way of treating something? How do you present those other options?
Well, I usually give people recommendations based on what I've used in the past, what I've seen works the best, what is used conventionally in most vet practices, and what my approach is to certain diseases or illnesses, and then really let the owner make the decision that's the best for them, and just kind of working together, providing the information that I have and coming to a conclusion is what's the best way to approach treatment.
So the start of summer, welcome in many ways, especially mm-hmm. after such a long, cold winter that
yes.
we had. But it also does bring some challenges for keeping our pets and ourselves, for that matter, happy and healthy. A couple of months ago when you were on, we talked at length about some natural flea and tick remedies. And I did repost that article with your recommendations. It's both on our Facebook page, and also if you go to WPR.org and then go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, you'll find it. Larry Mueller Show page, you'll find it there, too. But besides fleas and ticks, heartworm is a big concern at this time mm-hmm. of year. Are there effective natural products for prevention of heartworm?
You know, there is nothing that I have found that is as effective as the standard heartworm preventative, which is basically ivermectin that you find in HeartGuard or IverHeart. Those are the typical heartworm preventatives. So that being said, there are certainly things that you can do to help support your pet while you're giving the heartworm preventative. So I usually recommend that people do the heartworm preventative once a month to protect their animals from heartworm disease, because it is out there, and we do see it here in Wisconsin. Not very often, but it is present. What my recommendation is, while you're giving the heartworm preventative, to also give a supplement that helps to support the liver, because the liver is the organ that's going to be processing the ivermectin. And sometimes it can be a little bit hard on the liver as it metabolizes that medication. So my recommendation is to give milk thistle, which is a liver support herbal, for about a day before you give the heartworm preventative and for a couple of days after. And that really helps to support the body as it processes.
Wow. So a perfect example there of the two together can be much more effective.
Yes, exactly.
And just for people who might not be familiar with heartworm, tell us why it's such a serious concern.
So heartworm disease is transmitted by mosquitoes, and what it can do is that the larva of the heartworm gets into the bloodstream of the animal that might have been bitten by an infected mosquito, and the larva travels through the bloodstream and travels through the body to the heart and the lungs and the pulmonary vessels, and that's where it completes its life cycle. And then it turns from a larva into an adult, and it multiplies, and that's when it can cause serious heart disease.
So there are literally many worms living
yes.
in the heart tissue. Yeah, I've seen photos, and it's really quite horrible. So,
oh, it is.
And so you really recommend the preventative, and unfortunately, there's not a great natural alternative to the usual HeartGuard and those kind of products.
Right, that's true. And, you know, really, even the heartworm preventative that's out there, the ivermectin, is not 100% effective. And that's why it's so important to get your animal heartworm tested at least once a year. And sometimes, I mean, you can do it every 6 months, because there are heartworm species that are developing resistance to the ivermectin. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to test.
And that's a blood test, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We are talking with Dr. Carrie Donahue. She is the owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison, and she provides a whole range of holistic and alternative care in addition to conventional veterinary services. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Glad you're with us, and let's go to the phones. We have Dan in Partyville up first. Hi, Dan.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a German Shepherd Collie mix male. He was treated for a perianal fistula 4 to 5 months ago with a regimen of prednisone, and that was just horrible. Is there anything else we can do for him? I don't want to put him through the prednisone again.
Has it recurred at all, or was it treated?
Well, we think it's coming back.
Okay. Are you doing any other supplements or anything at all?
There's a salve that we got from the veterinarian last time, and we've been putting it on there externally.
Okay.
It seems to make him feel a little better, but I can tell this morning he was in some pain, and it's getting pretty red back there again. Mm-hmm. So we do have him on lamb and rice diet. He was on venison and sweet potato, and he was doing okay with that, and then we supplemented it with fish.
Okay.
And he seemed to be doing okay, but that was when he was doing the prednisone, and he lost like 20 pounds in 10 days. It was just horrible.
Wow.
So what else can we do?
Oh, my goodness. Well, perianal fistula, that's one of those where, you know, sometimes using those Western medications is really necessary to help beat down the inflammation.
And what is that exactly?
So a perianal fistula it occurs near the anus in the animal, and sometimes it is sort of like an immune-mediated reaction that the body has. And that's why steroids are often used in the treatment of it. The other option that might be out there, I don't know if you've looked into it, would be something like cyclosporin, which is also, it's not as strong as prednisone, but it can also help, and it might not have the side effects that the prednisone has.
Is it as effective?
I've used it in the past, and I have found that it is as effective. Yeah, so I might go back to your veterinarian and see if there is anything else that you might be able to try besides the prednisone, because prednisone is loaded with so many side effects. It's a very effective anti-inflammatory, but you are dealing with a lot of like the weight gain and drinking a lot and going to the bathroom a lot more. So,
although Dan, didn't you say that your dog lost 20 pounds?
And he lost weight
while he was on the prednisone.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the food was going right through him.
Oh goodness! And did he have any blood work done too at the time? Is there anything else that might be going on?
Yeah, he was perfectly healthy. His anal glands were good.
Mm-hmm.
They did a whole regimen of blood tests, liver tests.
Okay.
Everything was negative.
Oh okay. This might be another case where I would maybe explore some other of the Western medications, the strong sort of immune suppressing medications like something like cyclosporin. But then also what I would recommend is doing an herbal immune support supplement as well.
All right. Good luck with that, Dan. It sounds like a rough situation, not just for the dog, but for the people that care about him, too.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, and give us an update, Dan. We'd like to hear how your dog is doing. Let's go next to the Wisconsin Dells and Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Happy, beautiful day.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
It can stay like this all summer for all I care. I had a Dalmatian that almost died on me when he was a puppy. He had terrible kidney disease, which is in the breed. And he had the rerouting the urethra, very expensive surgery. And they told me that he would probably be in and out of the hospital for the rest of his life with infections of his prostate and his kidneys and his bladder, et cetera. And I started feeding him cranberry sauce every time his urine got dark.
Mm-hmm.
And he hated it. And I mixed it with peanut butter. And then he would just gulp it right down.
Oh, wow.
I'd feed him a can of cranberry sauce, and it worked like a charm. And he was only supposed to live to be 6 years old at the outside, and I got him to 13 and a half. And during that entire period of time, he only was in the hospital twice.
Wow. Well, I know that there, I'm not sure if it's a true thing or not, but they say that for bladder infections in people, there's something in cranberries that
yes,
can help. Might
definitely.
That be might
mm-hmm.
that be connected?
Yeah, definitely. Cranberry is great, and it's one thing that I use quite a bit for animals that have any urinary tract issues or urinary tract inflammation. And really what the cranberry does is it helps to acidify the urine. So if there is any bacteria that might be building up in it, the cranberry can go in and change the pH level in the urine and help to combat the bacteria naturally that way. So good for you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful to hear.
Now, one thing, Carrie, when we saw the little note there that Chris used cranberry sauce, because cranberry sauce is made for human taste
mm-hmm.
buds,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of sugar
in
that. Is that a concern?
Well, yeah. What I typically use in my practice would be like a cranberry extract. I know some people will use cranberry juice, and you can use it in small amounts, but I would really probably tend towards using a cranberry extract.
Because then you're getting what's really helping
exactly.
without all the other things.
Right.
Good. Mm-hmm. Well, good to hear and glad that Dalmatian was able to keep you company for so many years, Chris. Thanks for your call. Let's go right back to the phones and Elizabeth in Milwaukee. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Dr. Carrie. How are you?
Hi, good. Thank you.
Hi. I have a little tricky doggie. She's a little Havanese. Her on her third puppy shot. She almost passed away from the reaction.
Oh, no.
So we got her back, but now everything's tricky because she's been excused from rabies shot. We've done titers, but now she titered nothing on the rabies shot. She's just not processing any shots, and they think it's too risky.
Mm-hmm.
And now her heartworm test, she tested positive now for Lyme disease.
Mm.
And we're in a tick prone area in the summer. I've been using my Frontline religiously. I heard that on the website there's some natural alternatives. The vet decided not to treat her for Lyme disease, not to give her any antibiotics. And just my question was, is that what you would suggest, and also in the future going forth, what to do about this risk of Lyme disease for her? Would she have a greater risk if she's bitten again by a tick now that she's been exposed? I don't quite understand all of that.
Sure. Thanks for that call, Elizabeth, and certainly something that's unfortunately of big concern in Wisconsin with our tick population.
It certainly is. There are very, very many dogs that are coming up positive for Lyme disease. And what I typically do is I treat with antibiotics if the animal is showing symptoms. And for Lyme disease, often what we see are signs of arthritis. It often comes on pretty suddenly, and people will report that their dog seems like an old dog overnight. All of a sudden, they're acting more lethargic. They might seem more stiff. Sometimes there is a shifting leg lameness, so they might be limping on their front leg one day and on their hind leg the other day, and it kind of moves around like that. So those are the symptoms that I see most often of Lyme disease. And that, in combination with a positive Lyme test, is how I approach treating with antibiotics. If the animal comes up positive for Lyme disease on the test that's done in most vet clinics, it means that they have been exposed to Lyme disease. It doesn't mean that they have an active infection. It means that they have antibodies in their bloodstream. The body has recognized that Lyme disease is there and has started to produce antibodies.
Is reacting to the presence, basically.
Right, exactly. So it doesn't always mean that there is an infection. And I think that really differs between veterinarians and how they approach Lyme disease, if they treat with antibiotics right away, no matter what. And I think in this area, especially Dane County here around Madison, we tend to treat with antibiotics much more because those positive Lyme tests do mean that there is an active infection. So I guess that would be something to discuss with your veterinarian, how to go about with that. But really, if your dog isn't showing the symptoms, but they do come up positive, I would again go for those immune-boosting supplements. And I, some of the best herbs that I use for boosting the immune system would be like echinacea. It is a very, very well-known herb, and it's very, very effective and helpful for animals for boosting their immune system.
And those, all of those natural remedies, I mean, a lot of them are also available for humans to use. Mm-hmm. Is it fine to use the human formulas that we might find in a natural food store or something like that with our pets, or are there different formulations?
No, there are not different formulations, but you just have to be careful of the dosage. And a lot of times the herbs are pretty safe, so you can typically take the human dosage and just kind of titrate it down for your animal's weight. But it's always a good idea before you give any herbal to your pet to just check on the dosages and talk to a veterinarian or talk to somebody that knows what the correct dosage might be to make sure that you're giving the right amount.
We are visiting with Dr. Carrie Donahue today. She's the owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. She's a graduate of the UW Veterinary School, and we are very pleased to have her with us today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Dr. Carrie Donahue. She uses both holistic and conventional medications and treatments to keep our pets happy and healthy. And, you know, Carrie, one of the things that we wanted to talk about, because it is summer and because happily a lot of people are going to be maybe heading out on a vacation and sometimes taking their pets along, we wanted to talk about car sickness. You know, there's nothing worse for the person or the pet who's not dealing well with the motion and not so pleasant for the other passengers either. So what are some of the options? I think it's probably more common that dogs would be taking long car trips, but if there are things for cats too, that might be good to mention.
Yeah, and the therapies that I use are great for dogs or cats. So, and even, you know, putting your cat in the carrier to go to the vet clinic is often a time when cats will throw up or get nauseous. And really, there you kind of treat the anxiety the animals might have just being stressed out from being in the car. And then also some animals that really get nauseous and get the motion sickness. And you mentioned at the beginning of the show the chamomile tea and the ginger. Ginger is great for motion sickness. And what I usually give to people is an herbal tincture that has ginger in it. But you can certainly make it at home. If you take a slice of the ginger your root and you steep it in some hot water for about 10 minutes. You can give that to your pet. I would start probably about an hour before the trip, and then you can give it every hour kind of during and, mm-hmm. and after, and just kind of follow through that way. Ginger is really great for calming the stomach.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and the other one that I commonly use is peppermint.
I was going to ask about that mint tea is often used to kind of settle a stomach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it works wonderfully for animals too. The tincture that I use commonly, it's a ginger mint formula, and it is from the company called Animal Essentials, and it's preserved with glycerin, so it's a little bit sweet. It's very, very easy to give animals. So you're not making a tea and trying to get that into them, which, you know, that's not always so easy. This is easy.
Okay.
The ginger mint formula from Animal Essentials is very nice. And as far as cats go, another great thing that you can give them is catnip.
Oh.
Catnip, which is
in the mint family. That's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, and it's very, very soothing for the stomach. For cats, you know, sometimes it can get them a little bit more excited, but really it makes them feel good. It makes them feel like everything is okay.
Mm-hmm. So Which is exactly what you want.
So if you have any fresh catnip, throw that in the cat carrier with you before you go. And just even if your cat's not eating it, they're smelling it mm-hmm. and it's around them. So it's going to have an effect. The other thing that you can do is a little bit of lavender essential oil is very safe mm-hmm. for animals. And you wouldn't even have to put it on your pet. Putting a couple drops of lavender oil on a cotton ball and kind of swabbing down the carrier. There are some diffusers that you can get that you plug into your car's cigarette lighter mm-hmm. that will diffuse an essential oil into the car. And you can use lavender. And that's really great for just calming.
It's a very calming scent. I know a lot of kind of... like eye pillows and things like that have lavender in it because it's mm-hmm. so calming. Mm-hmm. And we had an email, Dee emailed to say she has two cats that she'll be taking with her to Arizona in July. They'll fly in the cabin under the seat. And she wonders if you have any suggestions for a calming agent for that situation.
Boy, so she's leaving in July. I would start now and start trying some things.
Okay.
Because there are many options out there, but certainly not one thing works for every animal. So I would maybe do some trips. And even if you're just going in the car, try some different things. Another one that I commonly recommend is a flower essence blend, and it's called Rescue Remedy. And it's made by the Bach Flower mm-hmm. Company. And that's something that you can really find at any health food store. It's a product used for humans, and it's also used for animals. It works great, especially for cats, calming them down. And that's something it's very easy to give, too. You can give it as a liquid right in the mouth. You can put some in a mister bottle and kind of mist it around them, and it gets into their system that way. Mm. You can put some on your hands and then pet them with it. You can do all of the above, and it really works well to kind of take the edge off.
Great. Well, and speaking of taking the edge off, we had a real doozy of a thunderstorm the other day here in southern Wisconsin. And I know a lot of dogs and cats really react poorly to those storm situations. Is there any additional advice that you would offer? Because that's more of a, you know, it's kind of in the moment. Mm-hmm. You're trying to help them get through that immediate situation.
Oh boy, isn't that tough? So many dogs do not do well with thunderstorms. And sometimes you need something stronger. So going into some of the stronger herbals that I recommend, one of them is called valerian root. And that is probably one of the strongest herbal sedatives that I know of. Now, with some animals that take valerian, it can go the other way and it can cause excitement. Not very commonly. Usually it just allows them to rest and relax and go to sleep. So that's one thing that I recommend.
And that takes effect fairly quickly when you give it to them? Or
That's something that I would give as soon as you know that a thunderstorm is coming. You could even start giving it the day before.
Okay.
Because I think animals can sense that a thunderstorm is coming hours and hours before it's actually present, and we're experiencing it. So as soon as you know something might be on the horizon, I would start mm-hmm. giving it.
Which, you know, most of us are checking forecasts fairly often for our own purposes. Mm-hmm. So I've seen thunder shirts used. Is that something you recommend? And maybe you can explain what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thunder shirts. Well, for some dogs, they work great and not so great for other dogs, but it's certainly something to try. And what it is, it's just like a tight wrap, like a vest that you can put on your dog, and it really kind of calms them down. It makes them feel more secure. Mm-hmm. So, and there is the company that makes thunder shirts, but you can also make your own wrap at home. And you can look up on the internet just ways to wrap up your pet. And you can
So it's like swaddling.
It is like swaddling. Yeah. Exactly. So it makes them feel comfortable and makes them feel safe. And sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah. So, and I've seen that for sale, for instance, at my vet clinic. So, mm-hmm. I probably most pet stores carry them as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I've noticed them in different mm-hmm. sizes, too. So whether you have a little Pomeranian who's mm-hmm. afraid or a greyhound, there's probably a thunder shirt
yes.
that would fit.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Great. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have quite a few people who'd like to join in. Erin in Grafton is up next. Hi, Erin.
Hi. I have a question about a cat and a question about a dog. We'll see. The cat has gotten kind of a chronic virus, the vet has said, had a lot of stress, and I think it came out when I introduced a new cat. It's nothing that they can, you know, it's not some of the big ones that I've tested for. But so he started out with a virus. He has a thyroid disease, which I've been treating, is sort of hard to control, and he has heart problems because of that, a little mm-hmm. bit of a heart murmur.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up at some point, so I've been trying to, with the chronic virus, his nose would swell up, and we tried antibiotics, and that seemed to, even though it was a virus,
mm-hmm.
but it does seem to keep it from getting stuffy. When I tried to stop after giving it to him for a month and a half, it came back right away. So I don't like giving antibiotics that long term like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up at some point with congestive heart failure and had to have the liquid taken off, and they put him on drugs for furosemide and enalapril.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, you know, he's not able to tell me if it's the right dosage, you know, mm-hmm. or not. And with this chronic virus, I think, kind of contributing, you know, to this, I'm just wondering if there are homeopathic or herbal remedies that might help with the virus, which may be causing, you know, some of this other stuff, the congestive heart failure, or at least it doesn't help it.
Mm-hmm.
And how to maybe... I don't know if I can get him off, you know, the drugs.
Well, let's see what Dr. Carey has to say.
Boy, do you know what type of virus he was diagnosed with?
No, she's, you know, I tested the cat that I brought in, and it didn't have any of the ones that you know, worry about, the basic ones that they can test for. So she thinks it's just kind of a generalized virus that would, and she's, I think she said there's no way of really testing for it. Maybe there is, but it's just, she thinks it was latent. Either they had it for a long time, or maybe from the new cat that came mm-hmm. in.
Oh, okay. One of the most common sort of viruses that a lot of cats are carriers for is the herpes virus, and that shows up in cats as... you often see if there is a flare-up of the herpes virus, you see upper respiratory signs. So coughing, sneezing, drainage from the nose or drainage from the eyes. And my approach to the herpes virus, and yeah, sometimes you do have to treat for secondary infections with antibiotics, but to really help beat down that herpes virus, there is a great supplement called lysine. And lysine is an amino acid that stops the replication of the herpes virus, and it really helps to boost the immune system for cats who are suffering from that. So that might be a place to start. If you're not giving any lysine, I would start with lysine first and kind of see what his response is to that.
I tried to give him the stuff that you can buy through the vet, and it's supposed to, you know, it's very smelly, which you would think they would like, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they won't eat it. And I bought some pills to put, you know, powder onto their food, but I tasted the powder. It's pretty bitter. You know, I didn't know if there was another way of getting it into them, because I could never seem to get them to eat the lysine that supposedly is very palatable.
Yeah, I know. Cats are just so tough sometimes. there are a couple types of lysine that I use in my practice, and really I have a variety to see what works for the cat that might benefit from it. And really, I think most cats can benefit from it. So I have it in treat form, lysine treats, and there are a couple of different companies that make lysine treats. So you can try out some of those. The other product that I use that I really love, it's from a company called RX Vitamins, and it's called Immunosupport, and it's a chicken-flavored liquid that has a high dose of lysine in it, and it also has reishi mushroom in it as well, and it has lutein, which is really helpful for the eyes, and the reishi mushroom is an immune support supplement that really works well, and the combination of all of those works synergistically, and cats really respond well. So that might be another thing to look into.
Good. Well, hopefully that helps, Erin, and good luck with that. Let's go back to the phones and Marnie in Madison. Hi, Marnie.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, I have a border collie who is turned out to be allergic to ivermectin.
Oh, boy.
So it just gave him just terrible digestive and issues. And so we switched to Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
But Revolution seems not to protect against Lyme disease the way Frontline takes care of those particular ticks, even though Revolution is really for the heartworm. And what I'm wondering is if I'm giving him both because I would like to protect him from Lyme disease, can I give it together? It seems like it's too much for a little body of a dog to handle, and if I spread it out, then I'm constantly putting that glop on the back of his neck.
Oh. Carrie, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think you're very wise in saying it's too much to give all of that at once. So I would try to stretch out the heartworm preventative that you're giving and the flea and tick preventative that you're giving. If you're giving one on the first of the month and you're giving the other one on the 15th of the month, just to give the body a break between the two and you'll still be covered. I think it is too much on the system to give everything at once. And I do see, yeah, sometimes animals do not do well with the ivermectin, and there are the alternatives out there. There's Sentinel, which is moxidectin, and then there's the Revolution, which is selamectin. So just different types. And the collie breeds can be sensitive to the ivermectin, so I'm always careful and usually not prescribing the heart guard, but prescribing one of the alternatives like the Sentinel or the Revolution.
And Carrie, is that a situation where you would also recommend giving, was it the milk thistle?
Milk thistle, yes.
To support the liver.
Definitely be sure to give that, yes, while you are giving it, and then for 3 to 5 days after you give any treatment.
Great. Thanks for that call, Marnie. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. We are talking with Dr. Carrie Donahue of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care here in Madison. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen is our on-air producer. Let's go back to the phones and Claire in Baraboo. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Judith. Hi, Doc.
Hi.
I was intrigued by your conversation earlier about the Lyme disease in dogs and cats, and you said, Doc, that there's a specific test, I take it, that can be conducted to determine whether or not the dog has it. Is that correct?
Yes, there is. What was your question again? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, Carl had problems with my question, too. As I understand it, for humans, there is no definitive test for Lyme disease. It's more a matter of narrowing it down by ruling out things. So I was curious if it's the opposite for pets. Is there a definitive test that you can conduct to determine if the pet has Lyme disease?
Oh, okay. So there is the test that's most commonly done is the test that's done in the vet clinic itself, which is, it's called a SNAP test, and we get the results very quickly. And that is what tells us if there are antibodies in the blood. So if your dog has been exposed to Lyme disease. Now, if that comes up positive, there are further tests that can be done to really determine is your dog in the state of having an active infection mm-hmm. of Lyme disease. And usually that includes doing blood work and sending the sample into a lab for a further test to see if there is an active infection. So there are tests that can be done, yes, to narrow it down.
Okay. One more real quick question,
sure.
Doctor. If you do just merely, quote unquote, find the antibodies, is it a good idea, generally speaking, to take action of some sort?
Well, yeah, that's where, you know, some vets will start treatment right away with antibiotics. I tend to usually start treatment right away with immune supporting supplements to keep the body healthy and to keep the immune system strong so that it can make sure that nothing turns into a full-fledged disease.
I see. Okay. Okay. And that wouldn't be a medication necessarily, then it might be a holistic thing.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And what are some of those options? We've talked about like the milk thistle helping the liver process things, but what are those general kind of immune system boosters that you recommend, Carrie?
Yeah, there are some great ones out there. And really, I do a lot of Chinese medicine as well. So there are some great Chinese herbal formulas that are out there. One herb that's used quite often in Chinese medicine that's also starting to be used more in Western medicine is called astragalus.
Mm, I've heard of that.
Oh, have you? Okay. Yeah. So, and then another one is called ashwagandha.
I have not heard of that.
And that's an Indian herb. And the two of those are really wonderful powerhouses for supporting and boosting the immune system and keeping that as strong as possible. The other thing that I would say, and we haven't touched on this yet, but I always talk about it, is feeding the highest quality diet that you
yes.
possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So good nutrition goes probably farther than anything else that I could ever recommend as far as keeping the immune system strong and keeping an animal in top health.
And Ashley, we had a Facebook question that's kind of related to that on the diet issue. Patty said, could you discuss ongoing allergies in dogs that don't ever get better with traditional veterinary medicine or food? He says, I heard that these dogs may be misdiagnosed and may have a candida yeast infection instead. Do you treat dogs with this kind of infection?
Boy, I do see a lot of dogs that have allergies that where it turns into yeast infections in the skin and secondary bacterial infections. So I think that the deeper issue there is the allergies and the immune system is not responding appropriately mm-hmm. to the allergens in the environment, and that makes everything just get kind of out of balance, and it can change the pH level on the skin, which can turn into these yeast infections, the bacterial infections. So you really have to go. What I do is I go deep when I start to treat allergies.
And so diet is really important. I mean, that's just kind of something we all know. But can mm-hmm. you say specifically why high quality food and a good diet is really important for our pets?
Yeah, so it's not a lot of the commercial pet foods that are out there have preservatives in them, which provide a heavy load for the body anyway. And a lot of the commercial foods have ingredients in them like corn and wheat and soy and large amounts of those that tend to be inflammatory in the body. So the body is constantly in the state of inflammation. So I think if you can get away from some of those inflammatory ingredients like the corn, wheat, and soy and go more towards like a grain-free food and feeding fresh food as much as possible, so you're eliminating a lot of those preservatives. Mm-hmm. All of that takes a toll on the body, and the liver has to process it and deal with everything. So, and the immune system has to deal with all of that too. So if you, as much as you can, do fresh food, whole foods, foods with a higher water content, your animal is going to be happier and healthier.
Mm. Also, I know that corn and soy are two of the most highly genetically modified
That's
crops
true.
As well. Is
mm-hmm.
that a concern for pet health, do you think?
Oh, I think it's always a concern. Yeah, I mean, if you can, and as much as you can, go organic. I know that's sometimes not always possible, but as much as you can, thinking about that, we really don't know what the longer term effects are of some of these genetically modified foods. So as much as you can, stay away from those. Another reason, mm-hmm. you know, to eliminate those from your pet's diet.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Dr. Carrie Donahue. She is the owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about keeping our pets happy and healthy with Dr. Carrie Donahue. She uses a wide range of holistic alternative care in addition to the conventional veterinary services that we're all pretty familiar with. And she won Best of Madison for 2014 in the veterinarian category. Carrie, it's always great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And let's go back to the phones and Deborah in Madison. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi.
Just calling to give a suggestion for dogs or cats. I would imagine it would work as well with anxiety. We have a small dog who developed an insane reaction to thunder, lightning, fireworks, and was inconsolable. We tried every kind of wrap, wraps, thunder shirts, plus ace wraps, medication, mm-hmm. lavender, mm-hmm. you name it, nothing. Just hysterical pulling to get downstairs under the bed in the basement as fast as he could. We were out walking him one day when a kid let loose a string of firecrackers, and we happened that time to be with a friend of ours who is a psychiatrist. And she's trained in EMDR, eye motion desensitization and retraining. Mm-hmm. And she said maybe tapping would help him. So the three of us, while this dog was pulling, like choking, pulling so hard to try to get back home and away from the noise, took turns sort of straddling him and tapping. And you just divide the animal down the center visually, left and right, and it's left-right brain signaling is what you're doing. And what you're trying to do is come in, basically I can explain it as very basic part of your brain, reptilian brain, starts this whole cycle of fear and accelerates through the brain. And if you can derail it, distract it on a very fundamental level, it's like you jam the electrical signal. So you lean over the animal, either facing it or over it, and you tap gently on either side of the shoulder. Left, right, alternating, not at the same time. Left, right, left, right, left, right. It took us probably about 10 minutes to really get his attention. He began to calm. Then he'd walk two steps, and then he'd start to panic, and we'd tap again, walk a few more steps, and we actually got him to walk the last block home on the leash without pulling. Now what we've noticed, and we've kept this up, and we live on the Isthmus in Madison, lots of fireworks, people setting off fireworks in their backyard throughout the summer, cars backfiring, lots of thunderstorms. Within a month, he sat in my husband's lap next to open 6-foot sunroom windows, windows open with this horrific thunderstorm, calmly, right next to the window. Now, when he hears a loud noise, he either ignores it or if it really bugs him, he will come to us for soothing.
Wow. Wow. So that's a huge difference.
That is. That's amazing. Wonderful. Good for you for trying that.
And I haven't experienced it myself, but I've seen that technique that Deborah was describing used for human trauma to help people move through traumatic experiences. So I guess it's not a big leap that it could work for an animal as
right,
well.
Right, exactly.
Because we're animals after all.
I know. And that's so true. So much of what we do for humans can be used for animals exactly the same way. I mean, there is such a mind-body connection that exists in animals just as it does for humans. So that is wonderful. I'm really glad to hear that works.
Well, in a way, maybe it's even easier to take advantage of in the best way possible of that mind-body connection in animals because they're not overthinking things like we do.
Exactly. I know. And I love that. And that's one of the things that it's so great to see with something like what I do, acupuncture, there is no placebo effect there. If I do acupuncture on an animal and the owner can see the difference, they can see the change, there is nothing else there that's blocking that.
It's not like, well, Fido just convinced himself that he felt better.
Right. Yeah.
Thanks so much for that call, Deborah. That's really interesting. And I love how our listeners help each other out and teach us something in the process. Let's go back to the phones and Suzanne in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Thank you for accepting my question here. I would like to know if an animal has, like a cat has, an upper respiratory infection, if what the consequences of giving a rabies shot might be at that point.
Oh, okay. That's a great question. Usually I do not recommend vaccinating animals if they are not well, unless certain situations where it might be a shelter environment and you just have to get those animals
and you're
vaccinated.
Weighing the risks.
Right, exactly. If it's an animal that you have at home and it's fighting off this upper respiratory infection, I would not vaccinate it for rabies at that time. The immune system is pouring everything it's got into dealing with the virus and the bacteria that are showing up in the upper respiratory tract. And to give that rabies vaccine, it would be to distract the immune system at that time and say, oh, now you have to deal with this, and it might make your animal a little bit sicker. So I would not want to risk it.
Can you test for that herpes virus?
It is hard. Yeah, for the herpes virus, it's hard to isolate that, and it's hard to get a sample and actually definitively diagnose that there is herpes there.
So when you give, but if you give the lysine, it's not, I mean, it's, there is, you're not doing any harm by giving the lysine. It's not.
No, you are not doing any harm. And that's the nice thing about a lot of the holistic, the alternative treatments is you're not doing any harm. It's only going to help. It's only going to stop that herpes virus from replicating if it is there. And it's going to help the immune system do its work.
Great. Thanks for that call, Suzanne. And I think Suzanne's question really highlights how important it is for an owner to be really in tune with what's going on with their pet and be able to kind of advocate, you know, to say, you know, I think maybe we should wait another week until this is over. And, you know, because they're with their animals a lot more than a vet who is just seeing an animal come in and might not know what's been going on.
Boy, I think that's so true. And like the other caller who had concerns about giving the heartworm and the frontline at the same time, like, yeah, listen to your gut, use your intuition and think about what that's doing to the animal and make your best decision based on that.
Let's go back to the phones. And Jill in Medford has an interesting question. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about sled dogs. I was wondering what you would recommend to be the best thing to heal cuts and abrasions on their paws and pads during the winter when we're running. I try to prevent it as much as possible from them getting the abrasions and the fissures, but that's not always possible with the snow conditions.
Sure. So Jill has sled dogs.
Yeah, that's a great question, one that I get a lot of time in the winter. There is a product out there that's called BioBalm that's really helpful and effective, but honestly, last week I made my own paw wax, and I used beeswax, and you can look up their recipe online. It's very easy to make. It's beeswax, some vitamin E, and then some herbs in there like calendula, which is one of the best healing herbs for the skin. Calendula, some St. John's wort, some comfrey in there, and you can easily make it at home. You can make as much as you need for your sled dogs and put that on the pads, and it helps to protect them, and it helps to heal them.
So do you put that on before they're going to be out or and after they come in?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Well, that's great. Is that helpful, Jill?
Yes, thank you.
Sure. Thanks so much. And actually, while Jill brought us back to winter with her sled dogs, I did want to ask, you know, lots of animals are out having fun in the summer just like we are. What are some good natural alternatives to taking care of, say, cuts and scratches? Nothing, you know, that needs stitches or something, but, the usual bumps and bruises and cuts that we all seem to get.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea for people to have some things on hand for their pets when things like that happen. And going back to the calendula, if there is any sort of a cut or an abrasion that you don't think needs to be seen like a vet, like it's not bleeding profusely, but a surface scratch, you can find a calendula healing salve at most health food stores or co-ops or pharmacies. That works really well. And I use that in place of something like Neosporin or a triple antibiotic. Mm-hmm. And I found that it works just as well. So that's calendula salve. It's also good to have that rescue remedy on hand for any sort of a trauma situation where your dog gets hurt or bruises itself or something. The rescue remedy can really help to calm them down in the situation. And another thing that's good to have on hand is the homeopathic remedy called Arnica. And that's really good for helping abrasions or cuts or anything like that heal from the inside out.
I bruise very easily, I use Arnica gel.
Yeah, you can use Arnica topically, and then you can also take it internally. It's great. It works wonderful.
It really does. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Jill. Let's go to Heather in Eau Claire. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Hi.
About 6 months ago, I got a rat terrier from a rescue organization, and they said that when she gets really stressed out, she'll have seizures. And I haven't seen anything like that, but I have seen other things that might be neurological in nature, and I'm wondering about any sort of test that can be done to figure out what might be wrong with her. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, she might try to jump up on something, and she just totally misjudges the distance and will smash into it, or try getting upstairs, and she's tripping over the stairs. And sometimes it looks like it's vision-related, but being that they didn't say anything about that, I'm just wondering what could be done to figure out what's wrong with her.
Okay, we have about a minute before the news, so Carrie, if you want to start the answer, and we can always pick it back up after the news if we need to.
Oh, okay. Probably my first step in this situation would be to have her evaluated by a neurologist. And there are some testing that can be done, and I would really see what direction they would want to go in as far as the testing goes.
Okay. So, but there are, it sounds like there are tests that could help kind of narrow down what might be going on. Do you think it could be a vision issue?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could be.
Or could be part of it, perhaps.
Right, exactly. So it could be something that's specifically in the eyes, or it could be something deeper in the brain that's affecting the vision.
How old is your rat terrier, Heather?
She's 2 years old.
Okay, so
I was wondering, are you familiar with any of the details of what kind of tests they do?
Well, it would depend. I mean, I guess if she... Let's see. There are, I guess I wouldn't be able to say offhand what testing a neurologist would recommend. I mean, there are certainly things like an MRI or a CT scan where they can go in and they're able to really see what's going on inside.
Great. Well, good luck with that, Heather. And we will be back after this look at the news to talk with Dr. Carrie Donahue about keeping our pets happy and healthy. Stay tuned. Sometimes a thick line is drawn between conventional medicines and natural remedies, but the truth is most modern-day medications were developed from age-old herbal preparations, and those more natural treatments can be both very effective and easier on our bodies and, as we're finding out today, great for our pets as well. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Carrie Donahue. He was the owner and founder of Full Circle Veterinary Clinic in Madison. She's a graduate of the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, and she uses a range of alternative therapies to complement her traditional veterinary medical training. Carrie, thanks again for spending time with us today. It's always so much fun.
Oh, thank you. It's fun for me, too.
And I can tell that our listeners appreciate it because the phones have been full, and we have lots of Facebook comments and emails. There is one open line, so if you'd like to join in, you can call 1-800-642-1234. And again, you can also post on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And let's go back to the phones and Sandra in Appleton. Hi, Sandra.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I'm calling because I have a Shih Tzu Bichon dog. She's got lots of allergies, but now she's developed what I believe are wart-like growths on her body, and I've had her to the vet, and they don't think it's anything serious. But I'm wondering, he never mentioned how to treat it. Is there any way to treat those lesions of any way?
And he did diagnose those as warts?
He said it wasn't nothing to worry about, and he said he he didn't really know what it was, but he didn't think it was anything serious. Mm-hmm. That's what I got from him.
Yeah, yeah. And though, yeah, I mean, the types of warts that I think you're probably talking about, it's a papillomavirus, and those do tend to crop up, especially on older dogs. And the recommendation is typically to not do anything about them. You can have them removed if it seems like they're bothering the dog, or if they're growing to a size where they might be starting to break open, or your dog scratches them and they can start to get infected. So then I would remove them, but typically they don't cause any harm, and they will just kind of pop up over and over. And what happens as the dog gets older, the immune system starts to decline, and it's not as strong as it used to be. So when the animal is younger, so it's not as vigilant. So that's when we see some of these, the warts, the viruses are starting to pop up, because the immune system can't take care of them or can't mm-hmm. control them before they show up on the skin.
Do they seem to be bothering your dog, Sandra?
She's getting one that's real large underneath, you know, where her collar is, and that's the one I'm most worried about.
So that's probably getting irritated.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I read just recently in a holistic, you know, dog treatments mm-hmm. to put banana peel on it. So I just started trying that. I don't know if that works, if it's going to help it or not. Otherwise, I bet you'd recommend just having that one removed, huh?
Probably that one. If it's in that area where it's getting irritated, I think the best thing and the one thing that will take care of it right away would be having it removed. There is a homeopathic remedy that I've had some success with in animals treating those warts, and the homeopathic remedy is called Thuja. Or some people pronounce it Thuja. It's Thuja. And you can give that orally to dogs. And sometimes that can help if your dog is just getting those warts all over the place. It might be something to try. It's not going to have any side effects, and it's mm-hmm. not going to hurt them. It will only help.
So maybe that one might need to be removed, since there's not
that
much you can do.
Right.
Unless, I don't know, Sandra, would putting a harness-type leash on instead of a collar avoid that?
She's got them on her body, too. She has a mm-hmm. history of, you know, open sores, too, because I have to watch what she eats. I put her on the grain-free meal because I heard you talk about that before, and her skin got considerably better. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching to see if I just gave her heartworm in a while ago, the Frontline, to see if one of those two are implicated in these open areas. Mm. Thus far, I haven't seen anything, but it may be just in the... She just gets it mostly in the spring and summer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Sandra. And yeah, we'll be hoping your little dog can be comfortable. Let's go back to the phones, and Sue in Madison is up next. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering what your guest would recommend to maintain a cat's dental health. I've had cats forever, and more recently the vet has been recommending that the cat be anesthetized and the teeth cleaned on a regular basis. And that seems like a lot to put the cat through for clean teeth. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if there was an alternative, or if teeth cleaning was really something that was essential for cats.
How old is your cat, Sue?
Probably about 12.
Okay. Carrie?
Yeah, do you do anything right now as far as brushing your cat's teeth?
I do not. I've got the dental toothbrush, or the cat toothbrush, and I have not been able to struggle through it much regularly.
Yeah.
Which I think is why, unfortunately, a lot of times it is necessary to do that professional cleaning, right, Carrie?
Right, exactly, because cats hate having their mouths even looked at. I have a hard enough time just getting them to open their mouth so I can take a look at their teeth. So I know how hard it is to brush your cat's teeth, especially. But dental health is so, so important. So I would recommend doing something. And sometimes even getting your cat a dental cleaning under anesthesia and then starting fresh there and then working on a regimen. Some of the products that I use, one of them that I've had really good success with is called Vets Life, and it's VetzLife. And it's a salmon-flavored gel that you don't have to get on a toothbrush and brush, get in there and actually manually brush your pet's teeth. And this goes for dogs and cats. You just have to get the gel in the mouth. It's kind of an enzyme-based, has some essential oils in there, and works really well for dissolving some of that plaque. If you can get in there and kind of work some of it off, either with some gauze wrapped around your finger or a very, very small baby toothbrush, that makes it work even better.
And it's Vets Life and it's VETZ.
Right. Okay. And it is, and I believe that you get through a vet clinic. It's sold over the counter under the name Pets Life, PETZLIFE. So that's one thing. The other thing, if it's really impossible to do anything in the mouth, there is a drinking water additive that I use, and it's, the company is called Oratine, and it's another enzyme-based, it's flavorless. You put a pump of this liquid into the water dish, so anytime your animal is drinking, it's getting those enzymes, mixing in with the saliva, and preventing that tartar from building up.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Sue. And actually, Sue brought up a very good point that, you know, just like for people, there are risks with going under anesthesia for a pet. And sometimes it is absolutely necessary, whether it's for teeth cleaning or surgery or something. Is there anything that you recommend, Carrie, that can, I don't know, make that experience a little easier on the pet's body? Or is it just, you know, anesthesia is kind of tough?
Well, it depends on the pet, you know, and really the older animals do have a harder time with recovering from anesthesia mostly, because the liver and the kidneys are the organs that kind of get rid of the anesthetic and the sedatives that are used. And older animals, when they're not functioning as well as they might, it takes a little bit longer for them to recover. What I usually offer to people, to pet owners, when their animal is under anesthesia, I can do acupuncture while they're under, and that really sort of helps them recover and do well after the procedure. So that might be, I don't know if that would be something to look into, but that's something that I offer to my clients. And I do dentals and I do surgeries in my clinic. And that's kind of another way that I incorporate the Western and the Eastern and do a little bit of everything. And it really does seem to help.
Wow. And like you said, there's no placebo effect with animals because they just don't know to have a placebo effect. Thanks for that call, Sue. And we do have about 12 minutes left with Dr. Carrie. If you want to call in, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. We had a question on Facebook. Belinda said, our lab had puppies in March, and within a few weeks, she had lost all of her hair. The vet gave us antibiotics for her, but as of now, it hasn't come back. Any suggestions?
Boy, so that must be the mother of the puppies lost all of her fur. I wonder if that had something to do with it, hormonal influence, or some endocrine issue there. So I would make sure that she had her blood tested and see if there is any imbalance going on that you might be able to treat beyond using the antibiotics, but maybe some sort
of
supplement.
Antibiotics would be maybe helpful for an infection.
For maybe a secondary infection if that was occurring.
Okay, so so check the hormonal endocrine issue. Brad from Minnesota emailed and said, what is your opinion regarding beet pulp? I've heard vets say it's okay and a necessary probiotic, but the all-natural dog food vendors say beet pulp is one of the worst ingredients for allergic reactions and inflammation.
Yeah, I think beet pulp is one of those ingredients that is used in some pet foods that might not be necessary. So I don't really feel one way or another about it, except that it's probably not necessary to have in the food, and it's not adding any added benefit to the pet.
All right. Let's go back to the phones, and Jim in Rhinelander is next. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I have a 9-year-old yellow lab. And she's been on Proen for about 7 years, and she just hates it. I have to force it down her throat every night, and I just wondered if there's anything else you could recommend.
And what is Proen for, Carrie?
Proen is used for incontinence in female dogs, so it's kind of helps with the hormonal balance there, too. And yes, there are a number of different alternatives that I use to Proen. Sometimes, especially for a dog that might have been on it for a while, you can start some natural supplements and then start to decrease how much of the Proen you're giving and see if you can get it off completely or not. Sometimes you always have to continue with something like that. But I use acupuncture, has been very successful for me in dealing with incontinence and helping to animals sort of balance their body out. And there are some herbals that you can use too. One of them is just a soy protein, and soy in the body turns into estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. So adding some soy in, and there are supplements that I use that have soy and that had red clover in them that just kind of balance those female hormones and supplement that way. So yes, there are alternatives. I would talk to a holistic vet and get some more ideas.
And actually, since Jim is in Rhinelander, he's several hours from here. Is there a good resource, Carrie, for finding holistic vets in other parts of the state or even, you know, the other parts of the Midwest?
Yeah, probably the top website that you can go to is the AHVMA, and that's the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association. And they list all of their members, and most holistic vets that I know are listed on there. So you might be able to find a vet closer to you that would be able to give you some help.
Great. So that's AHVMA. We'll have Carl put that up on the Facebook page, and then people can find that easily. But yeah, it's good to know where to find one in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Abby in Altoona is next. Hi, Abby.
Hello. I'm usually a one cat pet owner, but as of about 2 years ago, I inherited another one. So I have two female cats, and one of them, the one that I originally had, ever since I've got the other cat, she has developed snarls on her, so thick and just mats I cannot get out. Mm-hmm. And I had her shaved once when I never shaved a cat before in my mm-hmm. life, but that's the only way I'm going to have be able to get rid of the snarls again, unfortunately, I think. But is there... Do you have any idea why, all of a sudden, she'd be getting these snarls?
Hmm. Boy, I wonder, is there any change in her grooming habits? Maybe because of the other cats, she could be stressed out, or some behavioral mm-hmm. thing is coming into play there where she's not grooming herself like she was before.
I see her clean herself occasionally. She's still fairly clean.
Okay.
They don't get along at all.
Mm-hmm. How old is the cat with the matted fur, Abby?
She is 9.
Okay. Because I've had older cats that really stop grooming themselves mm-hmm. as much, too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and if there is any degree of, like, arthritis in there, it's not so easy for them to get back and clean themselves and take care of that matted fur. So maybe in this situation, just shaving it is the best way to go, because when they get those mats, that can be painful.
Mm-hmm. Is it painful because it's tugging on the skin?
It is. Okay. It gets so tight and it's tugging on the skin. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Mm-hmm. So maybe Abby could start with that and then see what happens as the fur starts growing back. Would that
mm-hmm.
be?
Mm-hmm.
Abby, is that second cat going to be there long term, or is it a temporary thing? Okay.
Yeah, she will be. They're going to have to tough it out.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
They're okay, but
and in that case too, maybe trying some of that the rescue remedy or some of the anti-anxiety supplements that I talked about for both of them, just to kind of create more peace in the household, I think would be better for everybody.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Abby. I think many of us have gone through the cat introduction issue. Carol in Milton is up next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question. I have a 10-month-old Springer Spaniel female that I'm going to have spayed soon. Mm-hmm. And I heard Dr. Sawchuk discuss a procedure where just the ovaries are removed.
Mm-hmm.
The vet that I use doesn't do it. And so, you know, I couldn't get good information about the pros and cons. And I just wanted your thoughts on it.
Thanks for that call, Carol.
Yes, thank you. I think we're really moving forward with some of these surgical procedures that we had always done a certain way. And now we're kind of seeing some of the longer term effects, like maybe it's not the best thing to remove all the reproductive organs when animals are so young. So I am all in favor of doing some of those newer procedures where either one or both ovaries are left in place. There's another one where the uterus is left in place and the ovaries are taken out. at. So I think more research needs to be done. There are some vets that do specialize in some of those, and maybe at the vet school they're developing some more protocols as far as those go. So I think it's definitely worth looking into.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing if Dr. Sandy was talking about it, it's probably relatively new, but that the vet school is using it and looking into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Great. Thanks, Carol. And Gail in Eastman is up next. Hi, Gail.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering about, I have two older dogs, and they're like 14 and 15 years old. One is just a Heinz 57. The other one is an Australian Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And my Australian Shepherd is just so terrified of and nervous, stressed going into a vet's office that, I mean, he basically gets the diarrhea just from being in there, you know, and as soon as you walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is there a safe type of sedative or anti-anxiety, something you can give them? I mean, I have heard, I know somebody who had their dog trimmed at a vet, and the vets actually sedated them to shave them, but at the same time, the dog would go into seizures. So.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so certainly, again, Carrie, something that a lot of pet owners deal with, that veterinarian anxiety.
Oh, boy, I know. And vet clinics, I mean, you can just imagine for a dog. It's filled with thinking what they're sensing when they're going in there and everything that's going on. So I know it can be very stressful. So I would say probably my top choice would be trying the valerian, trying that herbal. And there is a great herbal tincture that I use that's also by that company called Animal Essentials. It's called Tranquility Blend. And that's got the valerian in it. It has some other herbals in it that can really help to calm. The other thing that I might think about is seeing if there is a house call vet that might be able to come to your house so you can just eliminate that stressful visit, if at all possible. There are more and more house call vets out there. Some vets that will come to your house and have everything they need. Some vets that have a mobile clinic that will drive to your house, and they can even do surgery on those. So that might be something to look into too. Mm-hmm. I'm all for just reducing and eliminating stress in pets, because longer term, when pets are stressed out, it puts such a heavy load on their adrenal glands. So they're constantly pumping this cortisol into their bloodstream. If they get stressed out by anything, that can lower their immune system function. And longer term, it's just not good. Then we can see some chronic diseases pop up because of that.
And also, I'm guessing, kind of like when people are nervous and go to the doctor's office and their blood pressure registers higher than it would be at home, from the veterinarian's point of view, you probably want to be able to examine the animal in their kind of most normal or natural state as well.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have a cat that it was hard for our veterinarian to listen to her heart because she was purring so loudly.
Oh.
So. That's probably the exception to the rule of what you see, right? So we have just a couple minutes left. Marge from Stevens Point emailed that she has an 11-year-old Cocker Spaniel, has battled chronic ear infections, has used every treatment available. The vet labeled him as a hot dog and put him on a diet of no grain food and fruits and veggies, which initially helped, but nothing has really worked. Is there something holistic she's asking for those chronic ear infections?
Boy, and if you've tried everything like that, changing the diet and using the antibiotics and everything, what I would say is make sure that you are keeping on top of keeping the ears clean so it doesn't turn into an ear infection. Even if you're going into the ears once every day, once every couple of days, using a very, very mild cleaner, something like witch hazel or something like a couple of drops of vinegar and some water, just to keep on top of that. And it might be a daily or every other day thing to make sure it doesn't turn into an infection.
Mm-hmm. And does the age that the cocker is 11 years old, does that play into it at all? Or
Yeah, it tends to, you know, get to be more and more chronic as time goes on. And then what we see, too, are changes actually in the ear canal where the tissue gets thickened. So
is there even, like, scarring and things
like
that? Oh,
yeah, yeah. It can get pretty bad, especially the poor Cocker Spaniels that are just so prone to it. So keeping on top of it, there is a really great product that I use that you might look into. It's called Zymox, and it's an enzyme-based. Mm. I use a lot of these enzyme-based treatments for what's typically like bacterial, viral, yeast infections are treated very well with the enzyme-based cleaners. So Zymox might be something to look into, and that's something you can get over the counter.
Great. Good luck with that, Marge. And Carrie, thank you so much. The time just flew by.
Wow, it did. It did.
Dr. Carrie Donahue is the owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. She provides a range of holistic and alternative care in addition to conventional veterinary services, and we always enjoy having her with us.